Hi, everyone. This is Jason Brown.
Hey, this is Ashley Wagner.
I'm Gabrielle Dammond.
Hey, guys. This is Mariah Bell.
Hi, I'm Maya Shibutani.
And I'm Alex Shibutani.
I'm Caitlin Osmond.
Hey, guys. It's Christy Yamaguchi here.
Hey, this is Karen Chen. I'm the 2017 national champion, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Figure skating fans, it's Nick McCarville, and it's episode 28 of Ice Talk, the figure skating podcast from Ice Network. I'm back in the host chair after Jackie Wong led us to and took us through the World Championships, and it was a great Worlds. This year, we've got a couple folks that were heavily involved in that event in Helsinki. Karen Chen, the reigning U.S. champion, joins us first on the phone. She came through clutch with that fourth place finish in Helsinki. And then we've got Corey Aid on the phone. Corey, obviously coach to Jason Brown, but also does so much more work in Colorado. We got the chance to catch up with Corey as well. We're also doing this week's episode on the fly, so excuse any audio issues, but I think you'll enjoy the content as it is.
Well, it's my pleasure now to welcome Karen Chen, 2017 U.S. champion. You guys all know it very well. And Karen, fourth place at Worlds. You're going to have to start to get used to those accolades in your career, right?
Yes, I would think so.
How are you? We're talking in mid-April. You're back from Helsinki. Tell me how it's gone, sort of, I guess, readjusting to real life back in the States.
I think that it's been great. I mean, it was such a wonderful experience. I mean, Nationals was great, and so was Worlds. And I felt like the whole season was kind of, I mean, I had my struggles and I had my successes, and I feel like it was such a great learning experience for me, and I hope I can take that with me moving on to the coming season.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about, I guess, just kind of trying to soak all of that in, you know, getting used to what you accomplished this season. And does it feel like reality at this point, or is it still something that you kind of have to look at your resume and go, oh, wait, I won Nationals and I was right off the podium at the World Championships too?
Yes, for sure. It was sort of shocking for me because both times I just kind of had this mindset where I went into the competition with just kind of no expectations and just being really focused on what I wanted to get done. I'm just really proud of what I got done, and I'm really happy with how everything went, and it's just so exciting.
You know, when you look at the season, it's actually crazy. I was looking at your results from this year, Karen, and your top two results are what, you know, most people would call the biggest two competitions of the season, whereas you look at your Grand Prix, you had struggles there. I mean, if mm-hmm. you were to think about it at the beginning of the year, how proud of yourself are you for those accomplishments at those biggest moments?
I am very proud of how things went.
Yeah.
It's just been such a struggle, especially coming off of last season with all the boot problems. And
right.
just really, it was just kind of, I guess, mentally tough and physically tough as well, just kind of getting through those injuries and those obstacles along the way. But I'm just very happy with how I was able to really, I guess, take the time and realize that it's about the process. And I just kind of took each opportunity and each competition to just really learn and just know that my mistakes happen and I just have to move on and learn from them, and I'll just keep on improving and getting better from there.
Yeah. What was that process like? I mean, I know you had a series of injuries and you were talking about the boot problems, and even this year dealing with some illness. I mean, there's mm-hmm. obviously always obstacles to overcome. So how do you deal with that individually? How do you find your best self through those challenges?
I think that for me, it's just, I mean, when something like that comes, it's definitely very frustrating. But I realized that being frustrated about it is not going to get me anywhere. And if not, it's only going to make the situation worse. So I just kind of have to realize that, okay, so I have to deal with this. So what can I do to get, I guess, make the situation better for myself? So I just kind of build on that and just kind of, I guess, take things one step at a time and just try to head in the right direction.
So can you kind of talk us through, you know, I think you went to Golden Spin, and that's only, you know, a couple months before, or just a matter of weeks actually before yeah. Nationals itself. So talk me through the process of probably going to Golden Spin and not necessarily being happy with what happened there,
mm-hmm.
and then how you readied yourself into Nationals, where you really did excel, I think probably beyond a lot of people's expectations, but maybe you finally realized your own.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for Golden Spin, I remember it was kind of a tough competition for me because I just got back from being 2 weeks in Asia from Cup of China and NHK, so I was jet lagged, and I remember only having a week home, and then I left for Golden Spin right away. So it was kind of tough for me to come back from those two competitions, especially they were back to back, and it was just kind of physically tiring, and it was definitely a tough time. I was just kind of tired, but I tried to kind of push through. I was having some just kind of discomfort, and my body was just exhausted, so it wasn't really the best decision. But I do feel like I gained a lot of experience, and I realized that, you know, sometimes I may not be feeling 100% at competitions, but I'll have to just give it my best, and whatever my best is at that point, I'll have to deal with it. But, you know, it's kind of all about the effort, and I just want to be able to give in 100% no matter what.
Yeah. Karen, you're wise beyond your 17 years of age. You're giving me life lessons here. So then once you get into Nationals and get into that setting, talk a little bit about, for, you know, you and for Tammy Gamble, your coach, what was the approach for you? Because obviously you'd been on the podium in 2015, but you were coming off, you know, kind of a series of roller coaster results. So how mm-hmm. did you walk into the rink in Kansas City?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like we both kind of had this, I knew that I was having great practices and I was feeling really comfortable with how everything was going. And I guess we didn't really want to dwell on the fact that, you know, I do know that I wanted to make the world team. I wanted for all these things to happen and the Olympic year is coming and I need to try and make my mark. I guess thinking about it just kind of put all this additional pressure on myself. So I just felt like I wanted to alleviate all that. So I just really just thought about, like, this may be the last time I ever perform my short program and my long program. So I really want to enjoy it. And I feel like when I'm enjoying it, it's when, like, I will skate the best as well. Whereas when I'm nervous and I'm thinking so much, like, things just never go the way I want to. So I just wanted
right.
to go out there and just kind of enjoy the moment and be in that moment.
I was reading about you doing that, the same thing at Worlds, because there was a fair amount of pressure on your shoulders
yes.
there as well. So what are the practices, or how do you even, I mean, gosh, Karen, I would be shaking literally. So how do you sort of apply that enjoyment, or what do you do to make sure in the moment that you are trying to emulate what you and Tammy do on the rink every day?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do feel like at Worlds, there was a lot of pressure, especially media would keep asking, like, oh, you know, we need the three spots and it's our jobs to do that. And that did put a lot of pressure on myself. But I did also realize, like, you know, at Four Continents, I didn't have good skates at all. And I realized that when I let that pressure get to me, and I feel like all that pressure is just like mentally, because in a way, no matter what the circumstance or situation is, I want to be able to skate great programs. I want to be able to skate clean. And that's always my goal. So it shouldn't really affect that. So I just kind of thought of it that way. But at the same time, knowing that, you know, it's my first time at Worlds and, you know, I'm running out of first times for everything, you know, so I want enjoy that time.
Absolutely. And I think people might look at that result at Four Continents when you went to Pyeongchang and maybe look at it as a disappointment. I know that there were mm-hmm. some, you were sick, there were boot problems, obviously the mm-hmm. nerves. But then to do what you did at Nationals and leapfrog to what you did at Worlds, it's almost like you needed that Four Continents blip to then help you through the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that Four Continents was a wake-up call for me. It helped me realize that, you know, I do struggle a little bit dealing with the pressure, because coming off of Nationals, like, you know, I'm the national champion. Like, people expect me to be, you know, be able to perform, and so do I for myself. So I guess I just didn't know how to deal with that, and I wasn't having the greatest week, and my mindset was a little frazzled, so that kind of led to what happened at Four Continents. But I did learn from it, and I just hope that things like that won't happen again.
Yeah, sure. Youngest national champion since Rachel Flatt, I think, in 2010. What was, for you, Karen, what was the craziest thing, or how did it really sink in that you were national champion? I mean, I think there's a lot more expectation and a lot more attention hoisted onto a national champion than anyone would realize before it happens.
Yeah, I do feel like it's like something that I can't take back, but it's also been such an amazing moment for me in my career to know that I've worked so hard for this, and for it to become reality is just such, it's just so amazing. And I'm just really proud of how things came together, and I'm just really proud of how I was able to push through those obstacles and get there. And it's just so amazing.
Yeah. Did you expect it, Karen? I mean, did you, you know, we obviously have seen what you are able to do. You skate a, you know, a beautiful style of skating, but did you feel like you had that sort of skating inside of you before this year?
I think that I always deep down knew that it was a possibility. Like, it was a possibility, and it was something that I really wanted, and I was really determined to get it and to get to that point. And I knew that at some point, like, I would probably get there, just didn't know when. And I just, it came out of nowhere that that goal of mine came true.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So talk to me a little bit. Tammy Gamble obviously has been around for a while, and she's coached, you know, plenty of names that people would recognize, Ricky Dornbush, Brandon Carey. Mm-hmm. But for you and for her, this relationship seems to work very well. So tell me why that does for the two of you.
I think that our relationship has just been pretty much growing stronger, and our bond is getting stronger. I just feel like, because being a more like shy and introverted person, it's hard for me to kind of speak up and tell her my opinion, or like tell her if something is bothering me that day, if I don't feel 100%. But I feel like we've both like learned to, like, I guess, read each other so much better. And I've really been able to open up and just tell her my opinions. And we've been really good about working together and just kind of chasing our goals.
And what is, you know, what's sort of the challenge or the balance been, you know, since you won that national title? How did you guys, did the relationship change at all, or did expectations change within the rink day to day, or was Tammy really working on keeping you grounded and making sure you were focused on the process?
I think that for us, we're both pretty good about staying focused on what I want to get done, and that involves during a competition or just on my practices. I mean, I feel like we're, especially during my lessons, like, we're both just really focused on, okay, in this hour, what do we want to get done? And I feel mm-hmm. like it just works really well for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that you know, you've done choreography work for a while, but this last season, both your programs, you choreographed. So talk us through that a little bit. And, you know, are you looking to choreograph your programs for this upcoming season too?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like it just came out of nowhere how I ended up choreographing both of my programs. For the short, I did kind of start out on my own, because this music, I love it so much, and I have skated to it in the past when I was intermediate. And when I was kind of listening for music and I came across it, I realized that, you know, I really want to skate to this again. And this was during also a tough time coming from last season. And I just kind of, it was just a bit of, it was even, I didn't end up the way I wanted it to. So I was kind of rethinking about what my next step is. And I think as I was listening to this music, I just started to kind of envision my program, and it helped me kind of refine my love for skating. And it really helped, like, I guess, motivate me as well. So I just kind of went from there, and things changed, and I always like found things that I feel like could be better, and just gradually the program came together.
Do you feel like you, I don't know, do you feel like you connect to your programs differently, or what's the relationship with a program that you've crafted yourself versus something that you've, you know, obviously been working with or given to by someone else?
Mm-hmm. I feel like I just have this connection with the program, and knowing that I've done it, it makes me feel very comfortable, because the movements are something that I feel comfortable doing, and it's something that I know, and that kind of, it just makes me feel really good inside every time I do my program.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen Chen, reigning U.S. national champion, fourth place at World. She's on us this week on Ice Talk. And Karen, I feel like obviously the talk at Worlds a lot was those three spots and the pressure that we were talking about just a minute ago, but also a lot of talk of your connection to Christy Yamaguchi, the fact that you guys share Fremont as a hometown and that you're both California girls. But talk to us a little bit about Christy and the connection that you guys have, and how much of a mentor has she served in your career?
Yes, I'm just so thankful to have Christy in my life.
She's a pretty good one to have in your corner, right?
Yes, she is amazing. Like, words cannot describe like how grateful I am to just know her. And I've known her, when I first met her, I think I was 11 years old. So it's been over 5 years ever since I met her. And it's amazing. I mean, before Worlds, right, like the week before Worlds, we decided to sit down at a little cafe and just kind of chat a little bit. And just kind of talk for a little bit and asked her. I did ask her for some advice. And it's just so wonderful to have her and just kind of know that she's going to help me. And it's amazing. She's just such a role model.
Yeah, because we had her on Ice Talk earlier this season, and she said you guys had talked a little bit, but that you hadn't connected that well. So tell me a little bit more about that conversation. I mean, were you able to kind of get some sage advice from her on impending Worlds?
Yes, I do feel like we're getting more and more, I guess, connected, I guess, because I've always just looked to her as a role model, and sometimes I'll just find myself just be like, wow, and just like stand there speechless, because she's just so amazing. And I also realized that I'm also a skater, she's also a skater, and that's a connection, and I'm sure we share a lot of the same experiences, and to know more about what she went through and what her thoughts are could really benefit me, because I could probably relate to all of those things.
So, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but can we dive just a little more into Worlds? And I mean, Karen, the pressure that was on your shoulders, Mariah, Belle, and Ashley Wagner, but, you know, after Ashley had a free skate that she obviously wasn't happy with, you went out in that last group. And how aware were you of what had gone on and perhaps what you had to do in that free skate?
You know, I tried to block it out best I could, because I didn't want any of it to affect me. But I have to say that I did see that her name wasn't where I expected it to be. And I did sort of have this, I had this feeling like things weren't going so well for us. So I felt like, okay, I really need to perform. There was that pressure because I knew that now I really need to skate well. But, like, right away when I had this thought, for some reason, it was kind of magical. Like, somehow my mind just kind of closed off, and all of a sudden I was just sort of in the zone, and I just realized that, you know, I trained so hard for this moment, and I'm just going to do exactly what I do in practice and just kind of let it all happen. And Christy had told me that I need to skate dumb. That's when all the best skating comes from. So I guess it was like that dumbness that like washed over me. And all of a sudden I was like, okay, I'm going to skate dumb. And that's what I'm going to do.
I mean, that dumbness helped you a personal best by 13 points and a lot of accolades, obviously, including from Ashley Wagner, who said after that you, quote, saved the day for the U.S. team. I guess then once you hit that final pose, obviously you had that, the fall on the triple lutz, but you had hit, I think, six triples before that. And so what's, as you stand there, do you know that, yes, I've secured these three spots, or what was the feeling center ice at the end of that free skate?
Right when I ended, I kind of was like, I was happy, but I was also a bit disappointed. Like, I would have been so much better if I skated clean and those mistakes didn't happen. But I didn't know, like, where the points were, so I didn't know exactly if I had done it or not until at the kiss and cry.
Yeah, when those scores actually came up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, that was good, but I'm not quite sure if it's going to
exactly.
get her across mm-hmm. the line. Absolutely. Are you planning at this point to choreograph your own programs for next season, or where do you lie there?
I am not planning on doing my own choreography for next season. I will have someone do my short and my long, but I feel like for me, I will communicate to the choreographers and kind of let them know that, you know, I may want to add some additional things if they're okay with that. And I'm sure we could work together and figure out whatever things that I feel comfortable with and things that look good and put together something great.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Karen, as we turn the page towards the Olympic season, just talk a little bit about your expectations. And I would assume you want one of those three spots that you helped valiantly earn for the U.S. women. But how do you approach this season? Obviously, this last one for you had some bumps, but it really smoothed out at the end. So how do you look at the Olympic season, perhaps the same or different than what you've done these past couple years?
Yes, I feel like I just can't believe that it's coming so soon, and it's
right.
the Olympics, and that, you know, I really do have a shot at this, and in a way I don't want to screw it up, but I also want to just really go for it and just kind of be fearless and just chase after that goal and that dream. And so I feel like this season is very important, but I want to really make sure that I'm going the right direction, that I pick music that I really love and I really feel, and I have programs that I am proud of, and just kind of, I guess, just keep progressing forward and just being focused on improving from each competition, and just kind of, I guess it's still all about the experience for me, but I definitely want to make sure I'm heading towards the right direction and reaching that goal and making the Olympic team.
You've called yourself an introvert a few times now. So is that, mm-hmm. does it make it harder, you know, arriving at center ice and, you know, wanting to own that moment? Do you feel like you're fighting against your own personality at all, or does that maybe help you in some way?
You know, I do think it does a little bit, but sometimes when I'm on the ice and I hear my music, like, I feel like a completely different person as well. And I feel like that's why I also love skating. It's kind of my way of, you know, opening up. And I really love it so much. And I don't really feel, like, when I'm on the ice, I don't feel scared. I don't feel shy. And I just feel like I'm me and I'm just doing something I love.
Hmm. You're in your own element, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's the best place for anyone to be. All right, Karen. Well, I want to close out. We have a segment we call Fire and Ice. I'm just going to throw quick fire questions at you, and you're going to answer with whatever comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay. Get that left brain working, all right?
Okay.
What's your favorite go-to movie?
Harry Potter.
Nice. What's the most used app on your phone?
Snapchat.
Not shocked there. What about the second most used?
Probably Instagram.
Okay. What's your biggest fear?
Spiders.
Okay. Your most valued possession?
My skates and the next jade necklace on my neck.
Okay. What about a dream job that if you could have?
I would love to be a choreographer, but at the same time, I really would love to be a physical therapist and a doctor.
All right. Very good. Morning person, or are you a night person?
Morning.
Mm-hmm. Superpower, if you could have one.
To fly.
To fly. From competition to competition, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
Maybe on the ice, too.
Yeah, and on the ice. Maybe kind of fly and fit in an extra few rotations before I come down.
What's the most California thing about you?
I think it's the weather. I'm just so used to the great weather here when I go someplace colder, I get squeamish, and I think it's freezing.
And what's your go-to snack after practice or competition?
Strawberries.
Strawberries? I haven't heard that one before. How are the strawberries in Finland?
There wasn't that many, but there wasn't any. But usually when I'm at home, I'll have strawberries.
Got it. Very good. Well, Karen Chen, thank you so much for joining us on Ice Talk, and we obviously wish you the very best moving forward to the next season.
Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Corey Aide, and you are listening to Ice Talk.
All right, well, I'm happy now to be joined by Corey Aide. We all know her, of course, as a coach to Jason Brown, but she does so much more. Corey, we're going to talk about all of that and more, but first off, welcome to Ice Talk.
Thank you so much, Nick, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, good. Well, so we're just a couple weeks after the World Championship, so I just want to dive in there first. And it was, I would say, a great competition for Jason, finishing seventh overall. Just talk to me about what you guys felt like that went for you, and now that you're there's a little bit of space between the competition and now, how do you feel about it overall?
Yeah, I feel like we set an intention, and the intention was first and foremost that Jason would be able to go to World Championships healthy. That was our priority. When he was diagnosed with a stress fracture after NHK, we had to really take a step back and look at the calendar and decide whether that he'd be healthy enough to be able to compete, and second of all, whether he would be able to be the best representative, you know, on the team for the U.S. to try to secure three spots for, obviously, the 2018 Olympics. So, bearing in mind those two priorities, I think I would have to say that we've done a phenomenal job of both keeping him healthy and allowing him to train appropriately so that he, you know, was able to go there and feel like he could do what he needed to do. So for those two reasons, I feel really, really good about what happened at Worlds.
So Jackie Wong was hosting some of our Ice Talks while I was out tennising, and he had Jason on a couple episodes ago before Worlds. And Corey, he was just talking about the roller coaster season that you guys have had. I mean, it really has been that, and the challenges. I mean, I don't think, perhaps we spoke in early January, I don't think in early January you would have thought Jason would have finished seventh at World. So you've got to look at it that way and say, okay, we did a pretty good job here in the 12-week time that we had, right?
Well, I know what Jason's capable of when he's healthy. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like as long as he's healthy and able to train the way he needs to train to secure the kind of confidence that he needs,
right,
then I feel like anything is possible. And obviously in the age of quad happy skaters, all Jason can do at the moment is go out there and try to really knock him out with GOE and components and do the things that Jason does well. And that's kind of the message that I continue to send him, is that you can only do Jason. I mean, do Jason the way only Jason can do. And first of all, that's all you can ask of yourself. And second of all, it will be enough. It will be enough to leave a different kind of a legacy in the sport. It'll be enough to continue to remind people in the sport that figure skating is an art form as well. And so I think that he's carving out a niche for himself with regard to the artistry and the quality of what he puts out. But it's interesting because, you know, he was discounted as a jumper for so long. And if he can only stay healthy for a couple of seasons consecutively, I think that he will be able to prove his technical ability as well.
Right.
You know, the sow and the toe are really awesome when he's healthy. So it's just a matter of staying healthy and being able to continue to train those jumps.
Well, let's rewind a little bit, and by a little bit, I mean, let's go back to you and Jason. I think he started working with you when he was 5 years old, but talk to me a little bit, tell people the story of how the two of you sort of joined forces, and I'd like to know more about your background, too. I mean, you obviously have made a name for yourself because of Jason, but there's been a lot of other hard work, both in Chicago, and now you're at Monument Ice Rinks, and so for you, it's been a long career otherwise, too, right?
Yeah, definitely. It was, you know, a little bit serendipitous the way Jason and I met. Basically, his mom had his older sister secured with a private lesson spot once a week with a different coach. And for convenience purposes, she just wanted someone who could fill Jason's time at the same time. So she asked his older sister Jordan's coach who she would recommend, and she recommended me. And that was really all it was I've got free time. Here's a kid that wants a lesson, and it's convenient for Marla to bring both of them at the same time.
Wow.
So
yeah.
We laugh about that, but it's not as though they, you know, they sought me out or I sought them out. It just happened that way. The universe pulled us together really nicely. So thank you for that. And then it was, we laugh about a couple of funny stories along the way. One being that Steve, his dad, and I recall a moment where I said to the family, it would be really great for me to be able to teach Jason three times a week, three mornings a week before school. It would be really great because I think we could get a lot of work done. And he propped his foot up on the bench, put his, you know, elbow on his knee, and he said, come on, it's not like we're going to the Olympics here. And those
wow.
And I said, well, you know, he's 8. I can't make any promises, but
he's 8 years old.
I'm pretty sure that one extra private lesson a week will help
yeah.
him.
And did Steve agree?
And then Steve, he agreed. He agreed to the extra lesson.
Good job, Steve.
He didn't agree to the Olympic. Yeah, he didn't agree to the Olympic promise, but I didn't make one either. So.
And then fast forward to me, Corey, because, you know, people really, obviously Ice Talk listeners and Ice Network fans will have known Jason's name for a long time, but he really burst onto the scene in 2013. But that was after you guys had made that decision to move to Colorado. So backtrack a little bit for me there, too, and talk about that decision to go from Chicago
sure.
to Colorado.
Sure. Chicago has a lot of rinks in a very small radius, but many of them, most of them, are controlled by Park District or Parks and Rec Department. So I just found myself dodging learn-to-skate lessons and public sessions and hockey and everything else that a community rink has to offer during the day. And there were times, Nick, where I would drive with my left skate on because I could get to from one rink to another in 7 minutes, and I would fill my day going to as many as 7 rinks a day.
That
so,
is crazy.
Right. So I just had a nutty schedule that
yeah.
in order to teach all day long, I just had to sort of piece it together. And
you left that boot on.
Exactly. Run through the parking lot.
Yeah. Hobbling
that
through.
It just became frustrating because I really, you know, as my original group of young skaters grew and became more serious about skating, I felt that going away in the summers made a big difference in their motivation level and their exposure to, you know, what a training center felt like. And
mm-hmm.
the community of kids that I was working with were accustomed to going away to summer camp anyway. It was just very common in that area for kids to go away to 8 weeks of summer camp or 4 weeks of summer camp. So I just started to sort of create my own summer camp getaway, and we went to Lake Arrowhead
mm-hmm.
every summer.
Right.
And I made that be their summer camp. Hey, guys, you can skate, and, you know, I'll teach you how to make a pot holder or whatever, a lanyard at night.
Yeah,
so
summer camp, perfect.
Coach and camp counselor and chaperone. I mean, I kind of did it all. So
right.
It was a good learning experience, but it also is the kind of, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I talk about when I talk to young, motivated coaches. I say, no job, no role is beyond the description of what you should expect when you're raising
sure.
young athletes. So anyway, we decided that when that initial group of kids that I sort of raised and who were very loyal to me were ready to graduate from high school or move on or minimize their skating, it was a good time because Jason and Jordan were also graduating from high school. And I just felt really strongly about them needing to go away, you know, the way all
yeah.
of their peers were going
yeah.
to go away.
Yeah.
So college or whatever it was going to be, I just didn't feel like I wanted to limit their possibilities. So I gave them a couple of choices. I said, you guys really need to go. And if you want to continue to skate, go find a place that has a solid education and also a skating rink and good coaching, or we'll start to explore options together. And they both had been with me for a long time, and they said, we're not going anywhere. Let's
yeah.
go together. So Colorado was appealing to me because I felt that one or both of them would have access to the OTC at, you know, soon, if not right away. And
sure.
I also felt that altitude was good. I felt that proximity to U.S. figure skating headquarters was good. The weather is really nice, and there's no traffic. So for my own kids and my own lifestyle, it also made sense.
Yeah.
We just decided to come to Colorado and sort of make it happen, and I was motivated to build a program, and none of the rinks in the area necessarily gave me the opportunity to teach the hours that I wanted to teach or bring
right.
the skaters who I wanted to bring. And so I was left to my own creativity and resourcefulness, and I found a rink that was predominantly a hockey rink, and I basically said, please just leave your lights on in the middle of the day and I'll see what I can build. So that's really how it happened. We were fortunate enough to have the rink supporting us and giving us the ice. And now, you know, I'm able to actually rent the ice all day. So that gives us the freedom to do really unique programming like Roheen teaches. Roheen and Tiffany teach an edge class every day that's mandatory for our kids, which is unique. You know, Roheen compares it to like a bar class for dancers.
Yeah,
you
right.
And you work together, and it's really a serene and powerful experience for anybody who's come to take it.
So can you tell me a little bit about, and we don't have to go too deep, but just give me your background, because I don't feel like too many people know it, both in skating, and then I know you've done a lot in dance, but I was also reading about you have a degree in skeletal biology, is that right?
So I have a degree, yes, I have a Bachelor of Science from Loyola University,
yep.
And I did sort of specialize in osteology. I was definitely interested in the forensic anthropology side of things, did a little internship, sort of just came to the conclusion that that work was, while it really fed my science brain, it was also very reactive. I didn't have an opportunity to be proactive, and my personality
right.
is much more proactive. And as cool as forensics was, I needed to feed my soul in a different way. So I wasn't sure what to do next. I went back to Chicago to finish my pre-med prereqs, thinking that that would be a good idea. And I started coaching at the same time.
Got it.
And I was working at Northwestern Hospital, and I was also emceeing special events for a DJ company in Chicago. So I was doing a bunch of things. And
yeah.
one at a time, they sort of eliminated themselves from my list of priorities. And skating, the skating vortex, I like to say, sort of sucked me in.
Yeah. Gosh, these are great chapters for your memoir, Corey Age. That's
from
great. So you got sucked
analysis.
In by coaching that way.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, it was the families and the kids and the
right.
the feeling of these small victories that occur every single day when you're, as my dad says, when your antennas are up and you're looking for them. So, I don't know, it's just, it has definitely fed my soul in a way that forensics did not. And then, you know, back to my background, Nick, I think people don't know it because there isn't much to say. I mean, I was a skater at, it was mostly an ISI rink. I did some USFS. But I didn't have a competitive history to speak of. It wasn't
right.
something that anyone would have found impressive. I think that the reason that I have been a successful coach is because I have worked so hard to fill in where maybe somebody else did it themselves. I think that I have sought out knowledge, and I have researched, and I've learned, and I've really put my ego aside to learn what I need to learn to stay a couple steps ahead of my athletes at all times. And I've also been very honest about, you know, any of my shortcomings. I didn't do triple axels. I don't know
sure.
a lot of coaches in my generation who necessarily did, but
sure.
but that doesn't mean that you can teach it. And so I think I had to get over that insecurity of my deficiencies, you know, as maybe a competitive skater, and just seek out people that I felt were genuine in their willingness to help me. Anthony Liu was one of those people who I believe is one of the best jump technicians in the world. And really, I spent summer upon summer learning from him and refining my technique. my coach was a Gus Lussi student, and I think that sort of the merging of, you know, what I knew as a skater and what I learned as a coach have led me to be able to put my athletes first, put my own interest and my own ego aside, and really lead by putting my athletes' best interest, you know, first.
Yeah, well, that's something I feel like I've observed you do with Jason very much so, is, you know, Roheen's very involved, obviously, with the choreography, and you've had jump coaches in there, and it's a team effort. Obviously, you're spearheading that, but it takes a community or it takes a village to build an Olympian.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I like to think so. I like to think so, and I like to tell, you know, young up-and-coming coaches that really you're, I kind of compare it to being a general practitioner, and I say, you're in charge of the wellness of your athlete, the overall wellness. But if you need a specialist, you need a specialist. So there's no shame in that, right?
Sure, sure. Well, so you mentioned it earlier, but, you know, for Jason, the story has been the last few seasons revolved around his injuries. And that's mm-hmm. obviously not something anyone wants in their athletic career. But talk to me a little bit about coming off this season. You guys came in at the 11th hour, medaled at the U.S. Championships, went to four continents, which I think was probably a nice learning or growing experience for you all, and then mm-hmm. delivered well at the World Championships. But now we're 10 months away from the Olympics, Corey. We're, you know, say 9 months away from the U.S. Championships that'll be the Olympic qualifier. How does Jason stay healthy, and how do you help him sort of see through a plan to make sure that, you know, come early January and February, you guys are raring to go for Pyeongchang?
So I think that this has been, you know, it's been like a loop-de-loop, not just a roller coaster, but
yeah,
it's the back injury and then the stress fracture. I think growing and really trying to figure out the right formula for his strength to weight ratio and,
yep.
you know, jump volumes. I mean, these things are so athlete specific. And Jason is really, you know, he's an overachiever. So if you tell him to do 20, he'll do 40 just because that's the way he is. He's the guy that is at the rink an hour early to warm up and stays an
yep.
hour late to cool
mm-hmm.
down. And so he does exactly what he's told to do, which in a way is fantastic because he can stick to a plan. So as soon as we make a plan, he's willing to stick to it. So I feel, you know, from the aspect of just tactical planning, I feel really good about the direction we're going this upcoming season. And then again, it's now I need him to start to use his intuition as an athlete, because I think that that's, you know, that's a marker of maturity. And I feel that Jason's injury came maybe because he was doing exactly as he was told and not necessarily speaking up about what does it feel like and is it worse than yesterday. And I think that he's definitely gone through a huge exponential maturation through these injuries. And I feel that he's kind of using his voice to express when something isn't quite right. So I think we've got a really good communication flow and a really good formula now for keeping him on track. But to no fault of his own, he
right.
just would do and do and do until he couldn't go anymore. So
right.
we're not going to let that happen anymore.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think for you, how do you balance, I guess, the frustration? I mean, I would see it as frustrating. You know, he goes to Skate America. He lands a quad toe. It's called under-rotated, but it looked pretty good. And it's the first in the competition. And for him, I think a lot of people felt like, okay, this is Jason turning the corner, or this is the next level of Jason Brown. But then the frustration, or I guess that's how I see it, of having the stress fracture and you guys having to recalibrate everything for later this
yeah.
season. How do you, I guess, balance wanting, you know, everything to go smoothly, and then when you're met as coach with those challenges for your athlete to then recalibrate that way?
I think that is, it's funny because I feel like that's an area that I don't find frustrating at all. That sort of
you don't.
Feeds in, no, that feeds into my problem solving brain. You know, that's
wow.
my forensic brain that kicks in and says, okay, we're going to solve this. We're going to figure this out. This little bit of adversity is going to help you get to an even higher plateau when we get through it. And I think that that's the way that I've always coached Jason. You know, every setback, I've pointed out what a good learning opportunity it is, or what, you know, what a growth phase he's gone through as a result of what might be perceived as a setback. So I think it's really a combination of Jason and his family being optimistic people and really being able to see the glass being fully full, and me kind of making, using my resourcefulness and using my problem solving brain to always make it work, to always make it right, and to always be able to come out with, well, here's the, you know, here's the lesson behind that, or here's the, here's last year's, you know, reason or mantra or whatever it is. We just sort of turn it into, here's why it had to happen this way.
Yeah.
So I don't you get and frustrated, I, Nick. I have
you
to
don't.
Tell
you yeah, no, question. that's why you're a coach and I'm not. So Corey, when we talked in January, it was just over email, but Jason and you both set up this beautiful analogy, and I want you to go in for just for a minute about the golf ball. The, you know, how a golf ball, if it's a perfect circle, or it was at one point, it didn't fly well, but it's got all of the little, what do you even call them, divots?
I call them divots, but I'm not
sure. What's the technical term? Who cares? But share with us that. Just I love sort of thinking about that analogy and how it applies to Jason and what he's been accomplishing.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's, again, that's one of those opportunities to find something in the real world and point out that without the growth, the change, the metamorphosis, the game wouldn't be the same. So I use those analogies all the time in my TAPS classes, in my mental training classes. And I think that athletes really do, they grab onto, they hold onto that sort of metaphoric imagery, because I feel like it makes it all okay, because then they can take a little bit of the onus off of themselves. It's not my fault that I'm injured. It's not, you know, the whole, like, who do I blame? Do I blame the skates? Do I blame the coach? Do I blame the training? No, I just can look at it as there is no blame. There is no fault. Here we are. Let's metamorphosize. Let's change. Let's grow. And let's become a better version of what you formerly were. So I don't know. I just think that that kind of stuff swirls around my mind all the time. And I'm constantly bringing those types of analogies to my skaters when they need it and when they don't need it, because you can't wait until a crisis to come up with a solution. So that may even have been something we talked about when Jason was healthy. Who knows?
Right. Sure. Well, an idea if people haven't gathered, but a golf ball has many divots. And the idea is the challenge that Jason or that any athlete has faced, those divots help them then fly away. What would I even say, right? Soar to the sky.
better trajectory.
Thank you. Look at you golfing, all these golf metaphors. Corey, what's the most challenging thing of being a top level elite coach? Where does it, you know, where's the biggest challenge for you in the day in, day out with Jason?
I think I would have to say that it is the staying two steps ahead, you know, making sure that on every level, I continue to be prepared. I continue to be prepared with the right thing to say at the right moment, continue to be prepared with the right plan for a training day, continue to be prepared for adversity. And I think that constant planning and constant foreshadowing is probably the biggest challenge. It's what makes me the most excited about doing what I do, but it is probably the most challenging, because it's really easy to get stuck in a ritual or in a habit. And I think that sort of stagnation can really have poor results for an athlete. So I think a coach at any level, but especially at the elite level, really needs to be creative and resourceful and relevant.
No, absolutely. And what's been the best part? I mean, what have you enjoyed the most through all of it?
You know, I think that the thing that I've enjoyed the most is that having a little bit of my own success has allowed me to reach out to even more people, to send, you know, a message of what positive coaching looks like, of what ethical coaching looks like. I've been able to share, you know, technical information that was shared with me. And I feel like just sort of being at this level, people want to hear what I have to say. And I'm so grateful for that, because as I said, so many people have helped me along the way. I feel like it's my duty to pass it along. So I'm able to do that because of the success that I've had as a coach.
So Corey, talk to me. You guys head to Japan here pretty soon for World Team Trophy. To me, it just looks like another opportunity for Jason to get some more time on the ice because of the challenges that you guys have faced this season.
True. I think one of the, for Jason, Japan is his favorite place. As you know, or maybe don't know, he studied Japanese.
Oh, he does? Yeah. Weeks.
So loves competing in Japan, being with the Japanese fans, but also it really is important for him to get out and continue to compete, since he missed several competitions last season with a back injury. So the season can be extended 3 more weeks in an effort to continue to have his competition game face ready to go for next season.
And does it feel like, I mean, obviously you guys come off of, we were talking about that great competition at Worlds, but do you stay in competitive mode? I mean, is the training the same for World Team Trophy that it would be during the season, or do you pull back a little bit?
I would have to say that this is just called maintenance. You know, all we're doing is maintenance. He's actually working this week with Roheen, choreographing a new short. So there's a little bit of a distraction there, which is exciting because it keeps him from overtraining.
Cool.
And then we are doing just basic maintenance, running, you know, programs every day, and really not trying to get too much better, but certainly not trying to get any worse. So keep him healthy and keep him in the right mindset to compete again next week.
Right. And as you guys turn the corner from this last season to the next season, again, we've talked about injuries, of course, but a little bit of that quad conversation. I know that he's practiced the toe and the sapcow. So where do you feel on that front, and how do you look at that challenge for this upcoming year?
Well, we are choreographing the short with two quads and just going to sort of see if they can gel in time for the beginning of the season. But
right.
If you ask me, I love his quad style. If you ask him, he thinks the toe is the money move for him. So we're a little bit on different pages about that, because I know what I see and he knows what he feels. And but I think that both jumps are absolutely going to be ready, and hopefully he'll be willing to do them in the early season next year. That's exciting for him.
We're talking with Corey Ade. You're, of course, listening to Ice Talk from Ice Network. And Corey, you know, looking ahead to this next season, you talk about Jason obviously wanting to stay and working to stay injury free. But then how do you benchmark this upcoming season as far as goals or expectations, and whether that be result-driven or adding a quad or hitting a quad consistently? Or how do you tell me about how you guys look at this season and really sit down and say, I'm going to guess that mountaintop is Pyeongchang, but talk to me about sort of the camps that you get to that mountaintop.
Well, the most effective way to get to the top is to take every step, you know, and make every step as important as the last and as important as the next, but allowing yourself to stay completely present is really, really important, because I think we know that for Jason, making the next Olympic team is the ultimate next big goal, but the only way to get there is to continue to do what we've always done, which is consistent and deliberate practice, and really, as I said before, some good tactical planning. I think kind of knowing where we'd like him to compete, for example, you know, and allowing the periodization to work appropriately for next season in terms of the ebbs and flows, and, you know, gaining momentum leading up to a competition without overtraining, without undertraining, without injury. I think that those things are going to be really key. But we've done this for so many years together that there's an ease about it, and there's a trust that I don't find with many athletes that I haven't had as long to work with. So I think that is a really key element in why this works. Because if I say, Jason, here's what we're going to do, he says, I totally trust you. And he means it. So that the vulnerability that an athlete has to have to turn themselves completely over to the coach and the coach's vision is, I think, really key in getting where you need to be, because it's very easy for the athlete to become too emotionally invested. And so as a coach, if I sort of take that emotional investment away and I give them back the responsibility of just showing up and doing the job, whatever that job is for that day or that week or that competition, it takes sort of that big emotional burden off of them to own something that's bigger than what they feel capable of owning in the moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's interesting you're saying that, because I wanted to ask you what you see as, you know, your coach, Jason Brown's coach. And I think if, you know, we were to put a job title on you, that would be it. But then how do you see that, or what's your job description come to life as Jason said coach?
So we joke about that because his mom and I have a close relationship. And again, it was also her being willing and able and secure enough to say, you are going to play a big role in my son's life, you know, in raising this kid. So we laughed that his mom would say, what do you want for dinner, when he was younger? And he would say, let's call Corey and find out what I should eat for dinner. So, you know, it's everything. It's a little bit of everything. It's emotional support. It's intellectual stimulation. It's, again, like showing, I think, if I had to sum it up, I think that a coach's job is to believe in the athlete just a little bit more than they believe in themselves. So however that translates, whether that means, you know, that I think that my athlete's potential is greater than they think it's going to be, that's going to translate into a different type of training or exposure to something new that will push them, you know, outside of their comfort zone to a new place, a new area of growth. You know, so I think that that's, for me, that would have to sum it up, is that I just have to continue to be that sort of beacon of potential for my athlete. I can see the seed, and all we need to do is continue to nourish it. And I think that that's a head coach's role, is to constantly see potential in the athlete for growth and change and more and more and more. And obviously you see that with a lot of elite coaches. You know, they push their athletes beyond where the athletes ever thought they could go. So I think that's probably a common theme with all elite coaches.
Well, we appreciate you and the potential that you've pushed Jason to through and through these last few years. It's been a joy to watch all of it. We hope there's more to come, obviously, right?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
And please tell me you're not driving around Colorado with your left boot on.
No. I'm at one place.
Good.
I'm at one facility.
Those days are past. All right, well, Corey, thank you so much for having us on Ice Talk.
Nick, thank you for having me. It's been really a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Well, a big thanks to Karen Chen and to Corey Aid for joining us this week on episode 28 of Ice Talk. I'm Nick McCarville, and we love when you guys join us each week here on the podcast. We obviously want to hear from you. Use hashtag Ice Talk on social media or head to iTunes and make sure you leave us a review. You can find, of course, our episodes on iTunes as well as on icenetwork.com on the fans page. Again, we did this episode on the fly. I'm in Montana. My editor, Kate Sullivan, in New York City, piecing all things together. And of course, I have to thank Mickey Brown, who makes the Ice Network world go round. Once again, you guys, thanks for listening to Ice Talk. We'll talk to you all again soon. And thank you for taking us for a spin.